In Pittsburgh, they call it the Steel Curtain. Everywhere else, they call it the best. It is the Steeler Front Four, and its invincibility has quickly become legend. The major force behind this talented group is big 6'4", 275-pound Joe Green, number 75. The Steel Curtain, with Green in control, is young, tough, and just plain good.
Ah, the dulcet tones of John Facenda narrating those classic NFL films productions about the Pittsburgh Steelers. It is Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. 32 years after retiring, Steelers legendary defensive tackle Mean Joe Green's number 75 is being retired this weekend in a special ceremony at halftime of the Steelers game with the arch-rival Baltimore Ravens on Sunday night at Heinz Field. It's just the second time the Steelers have officially retired a player's number, and the first time in 50 years since fellow defensive tackle Ernie Stautner's number 70 was taken out of circulation. I'm joined now by Gary Pomerantz, author of the book Their Life's Work, The Brotherhood of the 1970s Pittsburgh Steelers, to talk about the significance of this event. Gary Pomerantz, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
It's great to be on with you again.
Gary, the Steelers are not one of those teams that retires numbers or has a ring of honor or numbers hanging from the rafters of their stadium. They've only retired one number officially. And the question is, why are they doing this now?
It's a good question. Some people thought Joe gave up his jersey when he tossed it to the kid in that Coke commercial way back in 1979. But if you're going to honor one Steeler, Joe Green is the guy. You know, and you got nine Hall of Famers to choose from just from the 1970s. Joe Green came to this town and he transformed this football team. When we think of the Steelers, we think of them as champions. But what people sometimes forget, particularly younger people, is that this team was historically awful. For about 40 years, it was a long walk in the desert. Joe Green came here in 1969, and he is the foundational piece on which that empire was built.
Right. Before Terry Bradshaw, before Franco Harris and Lynn Swann, there was Mean Joe Green. He was the first guy that then-rookie head coach Chuck Noll brought in 1969. So it's interesting that both Mean Joe Green and Chuck Noll, both Hall of Famers, came in together. So does Joe Green's arrival represent the point at which the Steelers started to get serious about winning? And what changed? What was the life of the Steelers before Joe Green and then after?
Well, you know, Joe Green and Chuck Noll arrived not only the same year, one day apart. Chuck Noll was hired after having been a defensive coach in Super Bowl III for the Baltimore Colts. And his first order of business as the head coach was to pick, the fourth pick overall in that 1969 draft. He had scouted Joe Green and loved him, and so they went with Joe Green. And things changed. The mood changed. People weren't quite sure who he was. And the thing about Joe Green is he wasn't the biggest, strongest, or fastest, but he had this compensatory quality. It was an attitude. He played the game with rage. A rage that I don't think even he understands fully. And it works, you know. He looms large in our imagination still, decades later.
Where did the rage come from?
Well, you know, I asked Joe about that, and Joe's answer was it was all about winning. You know, I suspect it's a lot deeper than that. You know, if you examine Joe's biography, he was raised in segregated Temple, Texas in the 50s and early 60s. He saw those downtown markings of colored and white for the restrooms. He knew he couldn't shop in certain stores. And he was raised without a father. He was the biggest kid in his class, and he was often picked on by older kids.
Well, all picked of that, on. Joe Green was picked on?
Hard to believe, isn't it?
It is hard to believe. Who was dumb enough to do that?
Well, things changed as Joe got bigger and bigger. And the great story about Joe is he was playing a high school football game for Dunbar High School in Texas, and they had to bus across town. They played in a white school's field. Joe was at an entirely African-American school at Dunbar. And they lost a game. So after the game, Joe was near his home, and he was walking into a diner. And he saw the opposing team's bus, Waco Carver, happened to be at the diner parked outside. So he goes in and sees one of their opposing players there, and he smears an ice cream cone in his face. The player was not happy about it, started screaming at Joe, goes back outside, gets onto the team bus, and here comes Joe coming out of this diner with the swagger of a desperado. And someone on the bus made the mistake of throwing a bottle at him. Didn't hit him. Joe storms one man against an entire team. The bus is closed, and he pries it open with his hands. It takes some time, and by the time he gets inside the bus, everyone's gone. They've all escaped out the back door. So he wasn't quite—
out the emergency exit.
Yeah, he wasn't called Mean Joe yet, but he was mean.
Well, and he got the name, I guess, when he came to the Steelers.
Actually, he got the name at North Texas.
Oh, he did?
State.
Okay.
They were known as the Mean Green. That was their nickname, green uniforms. They called him the Mean Green. And so that's one of the greatest names in football history. You know, you have Concrete Charlie Bednarik and Johnny Blood McNally. But football's a game of meanness. And Joe Green was a mean guy early in his career especially. And so, you know, if you think about it, there are certain empires that are the greatest in American history. In baseball, the 1920s Yankees. In basketball, the Celtics of the 60s. And in football, the Steelers of the 70s. And the defining figures of those three empires, Babe Ruth, Bill Russell, and Joe Green.
And so Joe Green comes to Pittsburgh, and how does the attitude change when he shows up?
Well, the first day, you know, some of the veterans at training camp were happy to see this guy finally show up. He'd been a contract holdout. He wasn't in great shape. And so Ray Mansfield sort of winks at some of the other veterans. Ray Mansfield was a veteran center. He says, I'm going to show this kid in the Oklahoma drill, which is where he gets down in a three-point stance against Joe Green. And they hand the ball off to a running back who has to run through a confined space, and Joe would have to make the tackle. Well, Mansfield's thinking he's going to knock Joe, you know, who he views as just another fat-butted center, rookie, or defensive tackle. He's going to knock him on his can. Well, the snap happens, and Joe just tosses Ray Mansfield like a rag doll and drops the running back. And there's just silence. And Elsie Greenwood told me, Elsie was a rookie at that time, that he saw some of the other veterans moving to the back of the line because they didn't want to take on Joe.
We're talking with Gary Pomerantz, author of the book, Their Life's Work, The Brotherhood of the 1970s Pittsburgh Steelers. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. What is your greatest Joe Green memory? 412-246-2002, the number to call. Email is ESSPGH@WESA.FM, on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. My favorite Joe Green memory, Gary, is a year, I think was one of his early years. The Steelers are playing the Philadelphia Eagles at Franklin Field, the old Franklin Field in Philadelphia, and things are not going well. And Joe Green gets upset toward the end of the game, and he picks up the football at one point and carries it with him and says, you know, we're done. I'm taking the ball with me. And then the officials are like, no, give the ball back. And then he throws it into the stands and they throw him out of the game. And, you know, what was this attitude new to the Steelers?
I don't know if it was new to the Steelers. It wasn't necessarily new to football. It became the trademark of Joe Green. And in that rookie year, actually the year before that happened at Franklin Field, there was a play where on punt coverage, Dick Butkus of the Chicago Bears just laid out L.C. Greenwood, blocked him hard, and knocked L.C. Greenwood unconscious. It happened to be right near the Steelers' sideline. And Butkus is looming over the fallen Greenwood, kind of the way Muhammad Ali loomed over Sonny Liston. Just then, Joe Green steps out and is face mask with Butkus. And Mansfield was watching this from the and thinking, this is going to be an interesting fight. And Joe Green spits into Butkus's face. And Mansfield would describe seeing this loogie hanging down off the face mask. And now he's waiting for the fight. And Butkus turned and walked away. And Mansfield pointed to that as the moment where everything changed. It's a new day in Pittsburgh.
There's something called the Steeler Way. What is the Steeler Way? And how did Joe Green help to create it?
Well, to me, the Steeler way was changed. The Steeler way was effectively losing for 40 years. And then Chuck Knoll took over. And Knoll doesn't, you know, often gets left out of the conversation of all-time greatest coaches. And he deserves to be front center in that conversation. You know, Chuck Knoll decided he was, you know, he didn't want any false chatter from his players. He didn't want to have to motivate with pep talks. He wanted self-motivated men who were going to play hard. And he also was willing to take a chance on certain players. He wasn't looking for the players who were the biggest, the strongest. He said, let's take chances on guys like Elsie Greenwood, who's a little too skinny and long. It looks more like a basketball player. We'll put him on weights, work with him on his techniques. We'll re-engineer these players. It worked.
And Joe Green, of course, we talked about his nickname. So did he like having the nickname?
The answer is no, he didn't like it. And early on in his career, he was chasing Fran Tarkenton all over the Bronx in a game in Yankee Stadium. And finally, he had his chance where he hit Tarkenton hard. But he was 5 yards out of bounds, and he was thrown out of the game for a vicious hit. And he said it was soon after that that he started to see these grotesque effigies all at stadiums. And they all said Mean Joe on it. But things changed in 1979 with the Coke commercial, which just transformed the way people looked at him.
And for folks who have not seen this Coke commercial, a young kid approaches Joe with a bottle of Coca-Cola. And let's listen, and here's what happens.
Mr. Green?
Yeah.
You need any help? I just want you to know, I think you're the best ever.
Yeah, sure.
Want my Coke? It's okay, you can have it.
No.
Really, you can have it.
Okay.
A Coke and a smile makes me feel good.
And of course, what happens at the end of that commercial is Joe Green tosses the kid his jersey, and there's not a dry eye in the house. So talk about what that commercial did for Mean Joe Green's image, Gary.
Well, you wanted to hug the guy. I mean, he was just adorable, Joe Green, all of a sudden. And it's funny that the day after that first aired in 1979, he walked back into the locker room and the teammates started applauding and backslapping him. And Dwight White, a fellow member of the Steel Curtain Front Four, a fellow Texan who often teased Joe, said, "Hey, kid, catch." And Dwight White rolled his eyes and said, "Yeah, right." You know, and Joe said the next year at the Pro Bowl, little kids started rushing past him, or other players, more famous touchdown scorers, quarterbacks and running backs, to him. They wanted his autograph, and they all said, "Joe, throw me your jersey." And you know, I spent a lot of time when I was working on their life's work with Joe. And in interviews, what I found was a deeply introspective guy, a guy with real feeling and heart. And you know, I know I talked with him a few days ago, this retirement of his jersey on Sunday at Heinz Field at halftime of the game against the Ravens means a lot to him. You know, it's only the second time it's happened. The other time was 50 years ago. Ernie Stautner, who was a defensive tackle with the Steelers. Stautner died in 2006, and he too was from Texas. And Joe told me he went to Stautner's funeral. It was just a few miles from his house. And impromptu, he spoke to at the funeral. And he said, you know, when Ernie came here, things changed. He put the steel in Steelers. And the truth is, the same can be said more definitively about Joe Green.
And is there stories that like the one where, you know, he does the Coke commercial? I mean, is that a true representation of an aspect of his personality? Apparently it was.
Oh, absolutely. And you feel it today. Joe was always an emotional guy, and he still is at the age of 68. The difference is he's a 68-year-old guy. So now the emotions are fueled by introspection, a life of experiences. And, you know, he's the only surviving member of the Steel Curtain Front Four. He delivered eulogies for Ernie Holmes and Dwight White and most recently Elsie Greenwood. And when I've talked to him about those men and those funerals, it doesn't take long for the tears to come. And that's what I think the Coke commercial brought out in 1979. You know, the multi-textured personality of Joe Green. Franco Harris liked to say that, you know, on the football field, Joe brought it all. He brought the emotional side, the physical side, the joy of it, the sorrow of it. And I think we saw all of that in the Coke commercial.
Gary Pomerantz is author of Their Life's Work, The Brotherhood of the 1970s Pittsburgh Steelers, which, by the way, is just out in paperback, talking about Mean Joe Greene, the ceremony that's being held to retire his number, just the second time it's happened in Pittsburgh Steelers history and the first time in 50 years, taking place on Sunday at halftime of the Steelers game with the arch-rival Baltimore Ravens. Before we wrap this up, let's talk about the legacy of Joe Greene. If the Steelers had chosen someone else in that 1969 draft and not Joe Greene, would they have been as successful?
Well, if you remove the yolk from the egg, is the egg still an egg? I don't know. I think he was that important. He was that central to what the Steelers became. It is certainly true that the Steelers had eight other Hall of Famers who played during the 1970s. But Joe Greene not only was the foundational piece, he was the sheriff of the county. That is to say that in the locker room, he kept everyone straight. There's a moment in 1974 where the young quarterback Joe Gillum is starting his slide into drug addiction. And Joe Greene heard about it. And Joe Gillum was the starting quarterback for the first six games of that season. Joe Greene privately confronted Joe Gillum. Joey Gillum said, "Mind your own business." Well, you don't say that to Joe Greene. Joe Greene grabbed him by the scruff of his collar and said, "It's not about you. It's about the team." And Joe was always about the team. And he was a straight shooter. The press always gathered at his locker after games because they knew he would speak from the heart. He would say it as it was. And so, yes, I mean, he was the guy who made this the city of champions. You know, in the 1970s, you had the Pirates winning World Series in 71 and 79, and the Steelers winning four Super Bowls. And during the Caligari years, it becomes the city of champions. But remember, this is football first country. And the Steelers, I would say, became the emotional life raft of this entire region at a time when steel was dying. And right in the center of all of that was Mean Joe Greene.
And he, of course, was the linchpin of that front four and a big part of the Super Bowl championships, the first of which was in 1974. This is the 40th anniversary year of that event. So if Joe Greene had not spent his career in Pittsburgh, do you think he would have been a Super Bowl champion even once? I mean, it's hard to say, but you have a guy like Dick Butkus of the Bears. I mean, you brought him up in this conversation. He's in the Hall of Fame, but he never won a Super Bowl. I mean, so how much of this was about not only Joe Greene making the Steelers great, but the Steelers bringing out the best in Joe Greene?
You raise a great point, and I think it's safe to say that he was surrounded by a constellation of stars. A little bit like Bill Russell with the Boston Celtics. You know, if Bill Russell had played for another team, would he have won? We don't know. It's fun to ruminate about it and throw out our thoughts. But what we know is that Joe Greene didn't want to come to Pittsburgh. He wanted to go to a place that was already a winner. But he came here, and things changed. It took a few years, and Chuck Knoll was creating a team in his own image. And he looked to Joe Greene to keep things straight in the locker room.
Jack Ham says Joe Greene is the greatest Steeler of all time. Is he?
I don't even think there's a question. Of course he is. Of course he is. He was named the 13th greatest player in NFL history. Well, I asked Joe about that, and Joe doesn't like to be 13th best in anything. And he said, you know, he said, well, any poll that has a wide receiver number one, Jerry Rice, by the way, was number one. He said, I have a question with. I said, why is that, Joe? He says, and he holds his hands out wide. He said, because the wide receivers are out here. And then he brings his hands close together, almost touching the palms. And he said, but the ball is in here. Joe Greene was in here too. And, you know, he was the ultimate gladiator.
All right, last question. Is Joe Greene the NFL's greatest defensive player of all time?
Well, he's right up there for sure. And that too keeps the bar stool spinning, right? You know, they have Butkus rated ahead of him and Ronnie Lott rated ahead of him and Reggie White rated ahead of him.
What do you think?
Well, I think Joe Greene was a better defensive player than all four of those men.
Gary Pomerantz is the author of Their Life's Work, The Brotherhood of the 1970s Pittsburgh Steelers, which is just out in paperback. And are you going to be there Sunday?
I wouldn't miss it.
Gary, as always, a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much.
It's great to be on with you.
Coming up, Pittsburgh's second annual Real Abilities, Pittsburgh Disabilities Film Festival is underway. We'll look at one of the films being showcased, the award-winning Stand Clear of the Closing Doors. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.